Hello, this is John Mueller from 800 CEO Read. I am talking today with Shel Israel, author of Twitterville, How Businesses Can Thrive in the New Global Neighborhoods. It's a book that's actually released today via Portfolio, September 3rd. So, Shel, thanks for joining me today.
John, thanks for having me today.
So, social media is a current hot and big topic, and it's complicated, it's simple, it's fun, it's all these things, which makes it a pretty interesting situation. Twitterville really struck me, and I really went through the book. It was an enjoyable read. It's an insightful read, and the reason being is that Twitter itself kind of always confounded me from the beginning. On one hand, it's very simple. You enter 140 characters, and you post it, and that's it. On the other hand, it's very complex because why the heck do you do that, and what happens with that, and how can you use it, and what does it all mean? And so I thought the book was really insightful in that it really describes in great detail and through great examples what Twitter is capable of, how people in the business world are using it to their advantage. And I think a lot of people can learn from this. So I want to talk to you a little bit about some of the points that you cover through the book. And I want to start out by saying that one of the great lessons in the book, through the examples that you talk about, is the act of listening through Twitter, using Twitter as a device to hear what people are saying about you and the things that you might be interested in. So my first question is, how are companies determining who they should follow? If Twitter is used as a great tool for listening to people, how do companies determine, first off, who it is that they want to listen to?
Yeah, that's a really good question. When I was researching the book, I heard probably from two-thirds of the business people I spoke to that they came to Twitter to get a message out, and once they were there, they started learning that who they followed would give them more information that was more valuable than just sending messages out. But how do you do that is, as everything else with Twitter, not quite as simple as it seems. The way I would start is I would use the Twitter search feature, which is there on everybody's homepage, and I would type in words that were really key to my business, perhaps a few people's names, a few market names, a few topics. And you'll go there and you'll go to the results and you'll start seeing certain people are really prominent on those topics, and you'll start following them. And when you start following them, you'll start seeing who they talk with, and you'll start determining who is interesting or valuable to your company or to your marketplace, and you'll keep following them. My advice to everybody is be very dynamic in following. The quality experience you have in Twitter is determined by who you follow. That's what you see when you go to your stream. You don't see what your followers are saying. You see what the people you follow are saying. So that's where you get the information you're going to bring back to yourself and your company.
Okay. So over time, you can build a really incredible group of people to follow and watch and listen to. So that's a great resource for businesses, particularly on the customer service side. Can you tell some stories or a little bit about how you've seen companies, particularly on the customer service side, using this?
It's sort of the customer service side, but what I find interesting is what Richard Binhammer over at Dell Computer told me. Dell has two different approaches into Twitter. One is selling, and they do a good job at Dell Outlet. Richard's on the other side with some other people, 150 of them so far, who tweet simply to engage customers. And they use monitoring tools, particularly Radian6, to search the entire internet to find not the people who love them, because the people who love them are going to do just fine. They don't need to talk to Dell to keep loving them. And not the people that really, really hate them because they believe that it's kind of impossible to convert the atheists. But in the middle are two other categories, those slightly favorable to Dell and those somewhat opposed to them. And they use tools to find people who say words that are combination with Dell, words such as sucks, such as really unhappy, such as poor. And they keep searching that all the time. There's 150 people who tweet about their own jobs, not about the whole company. And when those unhappy words appear, the person in that area is extremely fast to respond on Twitter in public. So very sorry you had a bad experience with our customer support line. How can I help? So very sorry that it showed up damaged. I'll arrange for you to get a new computer. And they consider this the best way of engaging customers that they might lose, or engaging people who might buy a Dell but they have some doubts about some past mistakes that need to be cleared up. I can give you more examples, but we have limited time.
Yeah, and that's really a great example. And so it really shows the opportunity that's there to get in touch with all these people, where normally, you know, customer service department waits for someone to call in with these problems. Well, if they aren't calling in, they're talking to someone else about it, and this is a potential opportunity to engage with these people and try to make things right. So
yeah, let's. If I could interrupt for a second, I'd like to talk about the difference between Twitter and customer service.
Okay.
Customer service people are often graded on how many people they can process through the system, and therefore they are motivated to talk to you, do whatever they're going to do or not do for you as fast as possible, and get on to the next conversation. This is decidedly different than the way it happens on Twitter. There is a second thing that is dramatically different, and I think the famous Comcast story is the best example of that. But this service and support on Twitter is being done in public. When a company representative is helping one person, hundreds, maybe thousands of other people are seeing a real human being at that company really trying to solve a customer's problem. This doesn't happen on a customer support line. So it takes the same kind of human resources on Twitter as it does in customer support, but the visibility, the ability to transform from unfavorable to favorable, the image of your company when it's doing support on Twitter is dramatically in orders of magnitude greater than it is on a closed customer support line.
Right. And that really alludes to the question I was going to ask. Once you're in that situation, whoever it is that's in charge of the company's Twitter account, how do they, you know, how have you seen in some of the examples you've looked at, how do they make it personal, or don't they? Is it just an avatar? Is it a company name that's responding to these posts, or is it an actual person that you're dealing with? What works best?
Well, there are a lot of company approaches to Twitter, and what works best for each company varies very dramatically sometimes. Most companies do not have a Twitter policy, and they see it as silly as a telephone policy would be. Most companies, particularly large companies, are seeing Twitter as yet another tool of communications. The companies that tend to trust their employees to use tools to get their jobs done are the ones that seem to be the most encouraging about using it. There is the issue of brand integration. So again, at Dell, they use this name at Dell policy, so you know there's a human you're talking to. You see the picture of the human you're talking to, but you know that person works at Dell, and very shortly you know whether they're a laptop person or a whatever person. There are companies that see Twitter developing, IBM, which is probably the tweetingest company on earth, with more than 1,000 tweeters, really use it to keep themselves informed. It becomes a real-time newsletter for what's going on at IBM, for their entire ecosystem, not for just themselves, but their customers, their analysts, the media that covers them. Best way of dipping in and seeing what's happening there is go to Twitter. And there's some irony there because IBM, of course, owns Lotus Notes, which was supposed to do the very same thing and did not. Or it did for a while, let's say.
Yeah. Okay, let's flip the coin now and look at it from the other side. So if Twitter can be used by businesses to kind of listen and follow people, how does it work on the flip side? If a company wants to promote products or services, how effectively are followers reacting to those pitches?
Pitches are not the right way to, well, right is a funny word, but pitches generally are not as well received as simply joining conversations. And when you join a conversation and people know you and know you for a variety of reasons, they tend to support you when you are promoting your product or service. I've been very active, and I've tried to be generous with information on Twitter for a few years, and these days, if you go to my Twitter account, you'll find a good deal of shameless self-promotion for the book we're talking about. I want to sell books.
Right.
And it is amazing to me the generosity of people in Twitterville who've known me, who've talked about other subjects with me, who've built a relationship with me over time, how much effort they're giving now to promote my product. I've never asked them to do that, and I'm not offering them any free anything, and they're not on my payroll, but they have come over time to see who I am and decide that perhaps they trust me and that my book is a good bet to be worth reading on the subject of Twitter. Same thing with Dell. Dell, who had a notorious reputation in support, is now feeling better trusted than companies that may be beating them in sales right now, but over time, being better trusted because of Twitter is certainly going to help them in the marketplace. Comcast, same thing. They don't even have a consistency in the support people that they're using. Some of them are Bill at Comcast, and then there's Frank at Comcast Cares. And so they never even thought through the branding thing, but what they do know is they have 10 people providing support and doing very well. My advice to any company going into Twitter is don't come in talking. Don't come in talking particularly about yourself. Join other conversations. Be a little slow to start talking, but spend a lot of time listening. See what's going on. And I think the best metaphor, which I don't think I remember to put in the book, is very much like walking into a business mixer, some kind of social networking event. And you walk in the room, and one guy may walk in and say, "Hey, everyone, here I am, and let me tell you about the new Wingding that we're selling," and so on. And you and I and most people in that room would very intelligently move as far away from that person as we could get. We would turn our backs to that person. We would go out of our way to ignore that person. If he persisted, we would probably be pretty strong in what we said to him. Somebody else comes into the room, and they join a small circle, and they listen, and you see him there. He nods and smiles, and then after a few minutes, he adds to the conversation. And he doesn't even start with saying, "This is who I am, this is what I do." He adds to the subject at hand. He joins the conversation, and people say, "Oh, hi, who are you?" And then he gets to talk about his business. This gets to me, it gets to the very magic of Twitter, and that people behave there very much as they do in real life. Extremely few business conversations ever start with, I'm sorry, extremely few successful business conversations ever start with either the question, hey, anyone here want to buy it? Or begin with a statement of, here I am and I have the handiest, dandiest gadget, blah, blah, blah. We hate to be pitched. We just want to talk. And conversations lead to amazing places very quickly.
What about?
Sorry to have been so long-winded there.
No, that's great. That's a great answer. What about B2B companies? Do they have to think about, Twitter is really, it's a big world inside Twitterville.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
How do B2B companies approach this? Do they have to think differently about it or anything?
Every company has to think differently. It doesn't begin with Twitter. It begins with why a company wants to join Twitter. B&Bs are made up of people, too. The conversations they have are people to people. And there are a lot of companies that are extremely successful in B2B. I mentioned IBM, which is the world's largest technology company, but never talks to an end user. But they talk to their partners, they talk to their infrastructures, they talk to vendors, they probably even talk to competitors on Twitter. It's not just big companies or tech companies. One of my favorite stories in the book is United Linen. United Linen, talk about tough times, they began in 1938. When a door-to-door salesman in Bartleville, Oklahoma, couldn't make ends meet. So he and his wife started taking in laundry from neighbors. And over four generations in the same family, this became United Linen, which is a restaurant, a linen laundry service. It's expanded from northeastern Oklahoma into four states. And they started using Twitter to promote other things they had in social media, particularly their nine-part series on the right ways to fold linen napkins. And I highly recommend them to anybody who wants to know how to fold a linen napkin. My favorite is the always appropriate, the rose. But it got a little more serious last winter when an ice storm hit that section of Oklahoma. The phone lines were down, and they couldn't reach their customers tell them that they would be late or not coming with the linens that day. They had told all their customers already that in such a case, go to Twitter, and they did. And they had conversations with every customer about what the status was. They got road information that stopped them putting roads, their trucks, onto dangerous places. And it could not possibly have happened without Twitter. So the issue isn't what about B2B or B2C. The issue is, do you want to have conversations with anybody? And if you do, this is a new way of doing it, and it's a way that is as versatile as the telephone, and it's a way that every company that touches evolves to see a really valuable use for Twitter or uses for Twitter, and they vary from company to company quite greatly.
One more question, and I think in some ways you've covered a lot of it, but I'll ask it anyway just to see if there's anything remaining. I just want to bring it down to the individual level. We've talked a lot about Twitter from a company standpoint and for business, but you know, there's kind of this stereotype that's developed now with people sort of abusing the privilege of Twitter by posting things like, you know, what they had for breakfast or what they're doing every single second, just mundane things that no one really needs to know about. So I guess looking at it in terms of that compared to people constantly, you know, only using it to write about the great things their company is doing, what's just some general best practices for people on Twitter? How do these conversations that you're referring to best form? I mean, can they form from people talking about what they ate for breakfast, or can they form from people just throwing out, you know, what their company is up to? What's the best way to get these discussions started?
Actually, I could spend a good deal of time on this. First of all, there are lots of times when you're very interested in what somebody had for a meal. They just walked into your showroom and they're talking to you and they say, well, I want to think before I buy that automobile from you. My wife and I, we're going to go have lunch somewhere. And you'll say, well, you should try Joe's Cafe. That's where all the locals go. And while you're there, try the shish kebab. And then when the person comes back, you're not going to start the conversation or pick up the conversation with, well, did you decide? You're going to say, how was the shish kebab? I found out that someone I knew was in Kauai the other day, and I mentioned to them my favorite restaurant in Kauai and recommended something they had for dinner, and they did, and they thanked me, and in return found out that I was going to be in Boston and recommended a restaurant there. So we do care from time to time about certain mundane details in each other's lives. And when you think of almost every conversation you have all day long, every day, with people you know, with people you do business with people in your family, you hear a lot of stuff that isn't that interesting to you or useful to you, and you either politely listen or you tune out a little, and then all of a sudden you energize because now you're hearing something that's really valuable to you. I said earlier in the conversation that on Twitter we act pretty much as we do in real life, and that's what happens. People are not always discreet in what they say, and they're not always terse and businesslike in what they say. It is easy to find that which is valuable to you on Twitter. I find it easier than voicemail from a telephone or other ways that people are trying to reach me, and they go on and on before I get to why they're trying to reach me. Twitter is shorter in style, so it lets you cut to the chase a lot. And then if people are constantly giving out stuff which is not valuable or interesting to you in some way, you just unfollow them. They go away. And that's why I said you should be very dynamic in who you follow, because that's your daily newspaper. Who you follow is the information that comes in. The quality of that conversation is adjusted by adding people and reducing and removing people. Did that answer your last question, or did
totally.
I just
totally? Okay. Yeah, and I think that is an interesting subject, and it's great to hear that because, from my experience, Twitter, you know, early on when I first started looking at it, I didn't get it. It didn't make any sense to me. And I thought, you know, there's so much noise on here. And if I contribute, I'll just be contributing to that. But I think, you know, what you just said and after reading your book, you really get the idea that, you know, everything that there is value to what almost everybody is saying on there if you're looking for that information. So it is a really incredible tool. And Shell, thanks for sharing all your thoughts today and having this discussion. I think it's really interesting stuff, and I feel the book covers a lot of ground and is going to answer a lot of questions for both businesses and individuals who either are using Twitter and want to use it better or are, you know, new to it and want to learn what it's all about. So thanks very much.
Thank you, John.
Yep.
Thanks for giving me the time.
Sure. And for folks listening, again, the book is called Twitterville, How Businesses Can Thrive in the New Global Neighborhoods. And it's published today, September 3rd, via Portfolio. Pick it up at 800coread.com. Thanks for tuning in today.